Okay, now is it going to work? Is the mic not going to squeal on me? Guys, I'm telling these guys over here, I think it's a curse. Every time I get up to preach on a Sunday, the mics go, whoa, and everybody goes, ah, and no matter what I say from there on out, I'm ruined. I was afraid that was just about to happen. That's what was going on when we first got it started. I've got to tell you, I am literally overwhelmed. What has happened this weekend is goes so far beyond what I ask or imagine that I just can't grasp it yet. My brain, I had to go take some aspirins, Wes. I mean, you guys, Marvin did. It's just incredible. You know, I realize now that I can't become a good speaker until, you know, my veins start popping like Robert and Carrie's does, you know, popping out here, you know. Until that happens, and I can't figure out how to make it happen. Do I need to start doing some weightlifting or something? I mean, what's the deal? You know, I don't know what to do. I am so excited about what is taking place here. Guys, I'm so excited about what's about to happen. We are about to unleash on this nation something that I've only prayed about all my life. I mean, I grew up as a little kid. When I was a little kid in church, I got to tell you this. I went to a church that the average attendance was 12. Okay? I've shown my students the pictures of it. I went home to Gans, Oklahoma, and brought pictures back and showed them Gans Church of Christ. 12 people was the average attendance. Out of that 12, there were only two males, the preacher and me. And I was a little bitty boy growing up there, obviously. You know, by the time I was 8 years old, I was doing the Lord's Supper. I was saying all the prayers. And if the preacher was sick, I was preaching. I was leading all the songs. I mean, that's just what I did. Even at that age, I wanted to see something bigger. Obviously, if you're in church of 12, you want to see something bigger. But there's always been something inside me that said, I want to see something happen. Well, I lived all this time. Now I'm obviously an old man, and I've lived all this time, and nothing happened. I mean, he's just shared what happened. I shouldn't say nothing happened. We shrunk. That happened. And it's tore at my heart what has happened to us, what has happened to the church in this country. While we've been sending people to Africa, while we've been sending people all over the country, all over the world, it's just been shrinking here. And I've had all my own theories and reasons why it's shrinking, but I'm not even going to get into that. There's no reason for it. The point is, it has. But what's about to happen is exciting. What can happen just out of this room is incredible. And I see it. I saw it in my students. We went to lunch. Oh my gosh, you just should have heard them. It's going to happen, folks. If none of you do it, they're going to do it. And I'm convinced you are going to do it. Could you give me some water? Why I've got cotton mouth. I've spoken enough times I've never had it in so long I don't even remember it. All of a sudden I've got it. Guys, something is happening. We did, as a part of Campus Ministry United, we did some phone research. We called every campus ministry across the country and asked them four little simple questions. And really what we wanted was the last one. We asked them how many baptisms they had last year. Some of you may have gotten phone calls from me. I know some in here actually got calls from me. I was shocked, to tell you. I was shocked at the results. It blew me away. I only had six states, but when I saw the accumulation, what I found in six states was average across the country. Out of the campus ministries across the United States, campus ministries, the places where the students are, the places where the 18 to 30-year-olds, 25-year-olds, well, 30-year-olds in most cases, in a real deal. The place where they all are, this is where the field is ripe unto harvest. Take a shot at what the average baptisms was in campus ministries across the United States last year. Anybody?
Two.
Two? Anybody else?
Nine.
Three? The average was three in campus ministries across the United States. Now, let me put that in perspective. I call one campus ministry 650 students in the campus ministry. 650 students in the campus ministry. I dream. I beg for something like that. 650 students in one ministry. When I got two, I was so excited as I went through asking him those questions, and the numbers were just huge, and I got two baptisms. How many baptisms last year? He said, oh man, we had a great year last year. We had three. You've got to be trying not to have any baptisms. You've got three in a year with 650 people in the ministry. Amen? You've got to be trying not to have. You've got to be bringing people in going, okay, we're not going to baptize you. Okay, that's not going to happen, so don't even come asking us about it, because you got to know the Bible front and back, and evidently nobody there does. Well, three of them evidently did last year. Well, then he qualified it. He said, well, I mean, two of those were Church of Christ kids getting rebaptized. So effectively, he had one. The news gets a little worse. You take out four ministries, four that are averaging over 10 per year. You take those four out of the mix, and it's one baptism per year. Guys, something's wrong. Something is wrong. And we're about to embark on something I believe that can fix it. But I wanted to go back, and this was dangerous, because I went back into my memory banks. My wife can tell you how extremely dangerous that is. I don't have any memory banks. But I went back trying to identify, what happened? Where did this start? And I found, even through some of my notes, I discovered something that I had forgotten ever took place, that I believe is at least one of the marks. I'm not going to blame it all on this one event, but I believe it was one of the marks. In excess of 20 years ago, and there goes my memory, I've got ADDDDDD, but I think it's a qualification for campus ministry because Robert and Carrie both have it, and I've met so many that I don't remember exactly how many years ago, and I don't remember the speaker, but I was at the Tulsa workshop, and it was a doctor. He had done a whole lot of research, and he was very proud of his research. And he put up this number on the board, 30%. And he began to share with us, he said, guys, you're going to find this number staggering, because this number represents the number of high school seniors that are going to leave the church. Three out of seven are going to leave the church. Well, I was in that crowd. I was stunned. That's not good news. This is not good news that we've got that many people that are going to be leaving the church when they graduate high school. That was worrisome to me. And so he started and began to lay out a plan. To lay out a plan that he said that we should and could do to curb this growing number, this disturbing number. And here's his plan from the notes that I took. I don't take very good notes, so it'll have to do because it was 20-something years ago and you don't know who he was anyway. The first thing he said we had to do was, we've got to do a better job of getting our kids to attend Christian colleges. And his thinking went this way. We've not done a good job of talking them into going to Christian colleges. We've got to do a better job from the pulpit. We've got to do a better job on the parents. He began to spell out all of these different things we could do to get our children to attend Christian colleges. This was very important to him that we do, because he believed that was one of the ways we were going to curb this growing number. We've got to get our students to attend Christian colleges. He went on to spell out, because one of the main reasons was, this is where we can keep them safe. If we get them into a safe environment and teach them and train them, they'll be kept safe, and this will lower that number. That was a great idea. The second one was, reach out to those that are not going to Christian colleges with campus ministries. Well, he went on to spell out his mission on this. He said, you know, here's the thinking behind it. If we can reach out to those kids on state schools and bring them in and keep them safe, then they won't be influenced by that world, and we'll have them attached to Jesus, and we'll have them focused and attached. And so if we just keep them attached through college when they get back to their church that they came from, or the next one they go to, we've got them attached and they'll stay attached to the church. Seemed like a good idea, right? Sound like a good idea. Again, he wanted to keep them safe. And then his third idea was, we have got to make our ministries, our children's ministries, our youth ministries, and our college ministries, we have got to make them more entertaining. He went on to do one of the no-nos I was taught in preaching. He went on to say, you know, the Baptists have beat us at this. He named somebody. They've beat us out at this. They're good at keeping their kids entertained and having fun. We've got to come up with a way to make our ministries more entertaining, more fun, and keep them, again, safe. And then he said, you've got to have a goal. And I believe this goal needs to permeate our Christian society. It needs to become a mantra within the church. This goal needs to be something that's on everybody's mind, on everybody's lips. And he spelled out the goal and then threw it up there with a PowerPoint. Keep the saved saved. I wish I could use his voice inflection when he said it. I can still remember it reverberating in my brain. I mean, it was almost like he changed voices. He went from his normal voice to, keep the saved saved. What is up with... But that's how he did it. And I looked around and people, man, they were buying into this like crazy. This was a fabulous idea. Then he did something that just, I don't know, I found it shocking even at that age. He laid out a formula. I didn't know it was on the PowerPoint. He laid out a formula that he said, this is how we're going to lower that number. It's a very simple process, and if we'll follow it in the church, we will lower that 30%. And here's the formula, as you see up there. First, you start out, you get married. Okay? Got to have a start, you know, get married. Once you get married, then you have children. Well, this is a great formula so far, get married, have children. I liked it, you know. So then you've got to entertain those children. Those children have got to have fun. And you want to keep them in safe schools, preferably Christian schools. If not Christian schools, then homeschool them. This is what he laid out. And then you get them involved in a safe youth group. A youth group that will keep them entertained, but keep them safe at the same time. This is the process. Then you ship them off to your Christian college of your choice. We've got a lot of Christian colleges. They ship them off to the one of your choice, depending upon the region of the country you were. He had ones that he thought was great. When they get there, they're going to meet their significant other. They're going to get married. Then you repeat the process. This was going to equal successful ministry. This was how we were going to lower that 30% number. This was the formula. And if we would follow it, it would happen. I'm going to tell you something. After being around all these years from there, I believe this is one of the marks of where it came from. Because across the country, we bought into this hook, line, and sinker. And this is the model of ministry that's been going on ever since I saw that. We developed entertaining children's ministries. To this day, on the East Coast, you've got Lads to Leaders. Over here, I understand it's called, here it's called Lads to Leaders. Over there, it's called LTC. Basically, it's for the children's ministries to be highly entertained, trained throughout the year. They go to a location for this high entertainment level and compete for ribbons and all of trophies and all of these things that go on. And it's just, it keeps them attached, keeps them safe, and keeps them highly entertained. The Christian colleges evidently bought into this because they started churning out youth ministers with a mission. And the mission was keep the saved saved. Keep them entertained, make it fun, and keep them safe. Keep the saved saved. Then what happened is many youth ministers became campus ministers. And they did the same thing. The campus ministry mission became find Church of Christ students. Oh, this is key. First, at your college, wherever you are, University of South Florida, we got to go find Church of Christ kids that are coming to our college. Okay? Once we find them, we've got to keep them safe. This is the model. And after keeping them safe, you've got to also entertain them. You've got to keep these students entertained or they're not going to be around. So they would do things like mail out posters, mail out letters to the youth ministers and churches across the country and tell them that, you know, we've got a campus ministry here. If you've got any students leaving your church coming here, please attach them to us because we'll keep them safe and we'll keep them entertained. And to this day, folks, that's the model of campus ministry across the United States. 90%, in excess of 90% of our campus ministries across the United States, this is their model. This is what they're operating from. You want to know what's wrong? Right there is what's wrong. I'll talk more about that in a second. I tend to get a little passionate, and I don't want to say too much, or else I get myself in trouble. 7 years ago, I wasn't exempt from this, tell you the truth. 7 years ago, I was headed into campus ministry. And to be honest with you, I had no idea what I was doing. When the church in Tampa hired me, I had no idea. I was scared to death. It's like, how am I going to do this? I mean, I had a passion. I had a drive, but I didn't know how to take that passion and drive. I had not, don't torture me or anything, but I had not gone to a Christian college. Harding had not got me. Oklahoma Christian had not got me. I had not gone to a Christian college. I know many of you are going to probably instantly dismiss everything else I'm going to say because I went to a junior college. I only got 2 years of education, and then I decided I didn't like that. So I don't have this education that I'm supposed to have to run this kind of ministry. Maybe it's why I'm not running this kind of ministry. I don't know, Gary, what do you think? But maybe that influenced why I'm not running this kind of ministry. I didn't learn it. So I didn't remember the sermon back in Tulsa, so I didn't know I was supposed to do it that way. Well, there I was headed into a ministry and didn't know how to do it, so I decided I better learn. So I went to what I was told was one of the very most successful campus ministries in the United States, and I sat down with the campus minister. I had a mission. I want to know how to do campus ministry. I told him. I went over there and shared with him. I said, look, I don't know what I'm doing. And they've hired me, and they've got 6 students, and I got to grow it. I mean, it's my job. If I don't grow it, they're going to fire me. I mean, I got to do something here. Can you tell me how to do successful ministry? He said, sure, man. I'll be glad to share it with you. Here is what he shared with me in a nutshell. Focus on finding Church of Christ kids. So that's goal number one. You've got to focus on finding. And he spelled out a whole lot of different ways. Everything from visiting different churches and speaking there to taking kids and doing service projects at their churches. He spelled out all these different ways to find church. And I took notes. How do you do that? I took notes. Then he said, you keep them happy and busy having fun together. Says, oh, this is a huge key. They've got to have fun together. The kids this age want to have fun. And they want to do it in groups. So you've got to come up with ways to keep them having fun together. Again, I took a lot of notes. I was very interested in this. Then he said something that the way he said it, his voice inflection bothered me just in the way he said it. Because his next statement was, and then, well, you have to try to convert a few of their friends. And he emphasized a few. You have to try to convert a few of their friends. When he said that, it hit me wrong. Number one, in his voice inflection. Number two, and it just seemed so trivial. It's just like, oh yeah, and try to convert somebody, you know? I mean, that just seemed to be his input about it. So I had an evangelistic heart even at that point. So I was taken back a little bit. So I did my nature. I challenged him on it. I looked at him and I said, is that the extent of your evangelism? And I kind of said it like that. Had that face on me. Is that the extent of your evangelism? He didn't take that too well. But his reply is very interesting. Very revealing, I believe. Look at his reply. If you focus too much attention on reaching the lost, you will lose your church kids. And he said, and Lynn, we're supposed to keep the saved saved. Guys, he learned that somewhere. Somebody taught him that. It's too pervasive. I've heard it said too many times. It was taught somewhere. Maybe it wasn't at Tulsa. Maybe not everybody heard it there. Maybe it just got repeated from. Maybe that guy at Tulsa heard it from somebody else. I don't know. But somehow it went throughout the church. This is the attitude that we were dealing with. And really are still dealing with. And I believe that this approach has led to a conflict between campus ministry and Christian colleges. Let me spell that out to you. It's real simple. They're competing for the same students. Think about it. If your ministry is driven by how many Church of Christ kids you can find and bring to your campus, you're competing with your own youth group. They're training their kids to send them off to Harding, to send them off to all the Christian colleges. That's what they're training them for. They bring the speakers from their end to talk them into. The recruiters bring them in to recruit their kids. Now, if you're a campus ministry and they're bringing in speakers to recruit the kids that you want in your ministry, what do you think's going to happen? I've even heard, in my own church, I've even heard things like, well, you know, the Christian college kids are just... they're just more spiritual than those kids you got in your campus ministry. More spiritual. Don't you think that leads to conflict? Of course it does. And remember, all of this started because 30% of graduating high school seniors were going to leave the church. We developed what I have termed in-reach ministries. And the focus has been keeping the saved saved. Tell me, how's it working? I think we already know the answer to that, don't you? Well, here's the latest research I just got from Dr. Flavel Yakely and a couple of other places. I can't even remember the names of them, but I gathered this research. Here's the latest. After 20 years of working in this in-reach ministry, here's the results of all of our work. That's right. 45% of graduating high school seniors are now going to leave the church. And outside the Bible Belt, there's many places that we believe that number goes up as high as 80%. It's a staggering amount. Something is terribly wrong. What is it? Well, I'll go ahead and say it. At the risk of angering some of you, I'm going to state the obvious. Our youth ministries, campus ministries, and Christian colleges have become glorified babysitters. We gather them together in the little holy huddles, keeping them safe, and Satan's snatching them away just as fast as he can, and we're doing nothing about it. We have not been good shepherds. And let me ask you a real serious question on that. Now that I've gotten some of you angered, let me just ask you, where in God's Word did we find this model? I have searched my Bible frontwards and backwards. Guys, I've been searching it since I was 8 years old. I have never found this model of ministry even mentioned in Scripture. It's just not there. What do you think? Maybe we ought to try something else. I think I left out part of my opening, but I'll go ahead and go to it now. Young camel walks up to his father camel. He says, "Dad, I've got to ask you some questions." I said, "Yes, son, what have you got?" He said, "Well, Dad, these feet we have, they're just huge. Now they're like snowshoes. When we walk around, I mean, the kids just all make fun of me because I just flop around everywhere I walk. So what is the deal with these feet?" He said, "Well, son, you've got to understand something. We have been given these feet for a special purpose. God has prepared us to endure the tortures of the desert. I mean, these feet are made specifically for that. When we get out in the middle of the desert where the sun has baked that sand, and it becomes real loose, and we step on it, we don't sink. Horses can't do that. When they step on it, then they sink up to their knees. Hello? Horses can't do that. Oxen can't do that. There's no other animal that can do that. We have been prepared for the tortures of the desert." He said, "Well, Dad, that's pretty cool." He said, "Well, then what about our eyelids?" He said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, these eyelids. He said, these bags under my eyes. He said, that it's like suitcases." So what is the deal with that? Dad said, "Well, what you're calling suitcases, this is absolutely special for us. We've been prepared for the desert. You see, when the sandstorm kicks up out in the middle of that desert and the sand's all flying at our eyes, we just lock our eyelids down in those suitcases and nothing, not a grain gets in. Other animals can't do that. They go blind if somebody doesn't put a hood over them." "You know what, Dad, that's pretty cool. One more, Dad. What about this hump on our back? What's the deal with that?" I said, "The kids are calling me Hunchback of Notre Dame." I said, "Well, what's up with that?" He said, "Why do we got to have this hump?" He said, "Oh, son, that may be our most special feature. You've got to understand that hump's there for a purpose, again, to help us endure the desert." He said, "In that hump, when we eat and we drink, it stores up food and energy and water in that hump. So when we get out in the middle of the desert, well, there's not any food and there's not any water, we can just keep right on going and get through the desert. Son, we have been prepared by God to endure the tortures of the desert." "Dad, That is pretty good. Thank you. I mean, you really make me feel better about myself. This is awesome. Thank you very much. He starts to walk. I said, wait. Well, Dad, one more question. Yes, son? If we've been so prepared to endure the desert, as you're explaining, yeah, what are we doing in the San Diego Zoo? Guys, if there is ever people that have been prepared to evangelize to this generation, if there's ever been people that are prepared to carry out this mission that's been laid before you this weekend, it's campus ministers. The fields are ripe unto harvest. If we can't catch the vision of what's going on here, something's wrong. Let me appeal to you to consider a different approach. Different from the in-reach ministry that we've seen and been modeled over the past 20-something years. I'm going to spend the rest of my time talking about this. This is what they asked me to come up here and speak about. The outreach filter. The model of ministry that we are using down in Tampa. I'm going to spend all my time speaking about that. Outreach ministry is not threatened by our high school students going off to Christian colleges. To be honest with you, we encourage it. When they come out of youth ministries, because youth ministries, for the most part, there are exceptions. I understand there's an exception at your church, and I applaud you for that. There are exceptions, but for the most part, they're in-reach ministries. And so they come out spoiled, rotten children. Just being honest with you, that's the truth. They're not any good to us in the ministry. They come in wanting to know what we can do for them. Go to a Christian college. That's what we would prefer they do. Now, we would like to see them when they get to that Christian college. We would like to see them, the Christian college, train them, teach them to die to self, live for Christ. We hope that our Christian colleges will train them to be dangerous warriors for Christ. We hope that our Christian colleges will send us back people who are ready to engage the enemy on their territory, because we're on the enemy's territory. State campuses is enemy territory, and we want to go take that ground. We need mighty warriors to do it. So we want our Christian colleges to train us people to send back that will become so, be so driven, be so involved that they'll take on the world and stand beside us and swing the sword. Now, we might have a discussion about whether our Christian colleges are doing that or not. We might, but we won't. It's not what I'm here to speak about. But I'll tell you, what's happening right here on this campus right now with Marvin Croson, this is highly encouraging because it is a shift. It is a change in direction. It is a change from just bringing the kids up and entertaining them. It's now a change that says we're going to give them a mission. Amen. Let's move on to outreach ministry. Our campus ministry in Tampa, CIA, is operating from the outreach filter model. In the past 6 years, we've grown from 6 to 120. We've had over 100 baptisms. And I want to point out that only one of those was a Church of Christ kid getting baptized. But really, before I completely spell out that filter, I want to tell you where it came from. I want to give you a little history where I got this idea from, because it didn't come from me. As I told you, I didn't know what I was doing when I got over there. I still don't.
Amen.
I knew he was going to say that. That's why I took a drink. I didn't know what I was doing. I still don't. But I got this model from someone who I believe did know. I told you I went and visited campus ministry, and he laid out that plan for me. And so I went to Tampa in the beginning with the same plan. I was going to find Church of Christ kids. I was going to get them on board. I was going to entertain them, make it fun for them. I mailed out hundreds of letters. Our elders bought into this hook, line, and sinker. I mailed out letters to every church in Florida. If it had a church of more than 75 people, they got a letter from us and a poster. And I got zero results. I found out real quick I was not in the Bible Belt. We didn't have very many Church of Christ kids coming to our campus. Right, Aurelio? Now, keep in mind, we had 6 students. And I was hired to grow a ministry. And after 4 months of hard work, we now had 7 students. I had baptized one, and completely by accident. I got to tell you, I begin to get a little worried. I mean, here's my job. They put a lot of faith in me to hire me and bring me over there. They paid for my move all the way from Texas to Florida. I mean, they really thought I knew what I was doing and I could do this job, and we were getting nowhere. My wife and I started praying. I began to panic, be honest with you. We began to pray. We began to start doing some Bible study together, trying to say, what do we do? How do we do it? Lord, tell us. I mean, show us. Obviously, I don't know. I'm so far from their age, I can't figure out what they want. Please, lay it out for me. Tell this dumb old boy from Oklahoma how to do this campus ministry that you put me in. Blaming it on him. How do you do this? Well, then one day during our Bible studies, my wife and I read Luke 14, 16 through 20. It's going to be up here, but if you have it, you can look at it. Jesus replied, "A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time the banquet was ready, he sent his servants to tell those who had been invited, 'Tell them, come, everything is ready. We've got food on the table. We've cooked barbecue all week. I smoked it for 12 hours. We've got food. It is prepared. You guys have got to come to the banquet.'" Isn't that... I'm using LSV version. Lynn Stringfellow version. I'm sorry. That's NIV. So it's a little different. So anyway, the answer came back, but they all began to make excuses. You know the excuses. I've got to go home for the weekend. I mean, I can't come. I'm sorry, I would like to, but this is homecoming. I mean, I got my girlfriend still in high school. You know, I got to go home and be a part of homecoming. You know, I can't get involved. Sorry, I can't make it. You know, oh, there's another event going on campus. Sorry, I can't make your, you know, I just can't make it. I can't come. Oh, you know, band practice. I mean, the excuses just started pouring in. Again, that's LSV version. We stopped right there at the end of verse 20. My wife and I stopped and we discussed what we had just read, and it hit us. It hit us like a brick. That's exactly what was going on in Tampa. It's not that we wasn't trying. We were finding a few, very few, or qualified few, church kids. But they didn't want anything to do with us. They went home every weekend to be with their youth group. They had different churches they would try. They had homework. They had activities on campus, etc., etc., etc. Bottom line was, they just didn't have time for our ministry. So we realized that's what was going on. So we read on. Verse 21. Servant came back and reported this to his master. Then the owner of the house became angry, ordered his servant, "Go out quickly into the streets, alleys of the town. Bring the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame." Stand with NIV now. "Sir," the servant said, "what you ordered has been done, but there's no room." There's still room. Then the master told his servant, "Go out into the roads and county lanes, and make them come in, so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those men who are invited will get a taste of my banquet." Guys, I got to tell you, I felt like somebody, and he was God, had just punched me right in the gut. And it hurt. Because I had been doing something wrong. I decided right then and there we were going to reach out to the lost on our campus. We were going to find them, and we were going to show them Jesus Christ. That became our mission. It became what we were going to be about. But I still had a problem. I didn't know how. How am I going to do this? Then I remembered, my short-term memory bank kicked in and I had a little bit of memory. I remembered a man who was running a youth ministry. And he had taken this youth ministry, he was in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He had taken this youth ministry from about a dozen and grown it to over 250 in a matter of 2 years. And he had done it through baptism. And a good friend of mine had served it as an intern with him. I said, he can tell me how to do this. He can tell me how he did it. So I talked to my elders. I went over there to see him. His name's Mitch Wilburn. He's currently the pulpit minister at Park Plaza in Tulsa. He was the youth minister at the time I went and talked to him. We discussed that a little bit earlier. It's where you got your inspiration from, isn't it? I sat down with Mitch, and here's the notes I took from the meeting, and that's what I'm going to share with you. This is what I was brought in here to share with you today. This is how we do ministry in Tampa, because I've modeled exactly verbatim what he taught me, and it has worked. The outreach filter. Every idea is run through the filter. I'll go into that in more detail in a few minutes. He said that, Lynn, you have to have a ministry with a purpose on purpose. You have to be about something. And I'm going to lay out to you what I believe you should be about, because this is what, you want to know how I did it, this is what we have to be about. Number one, first and foremost, you have to be about seeking and saving the lost. You have to be an organization that exists for the purpose of finding lost souls and bringing them to Jesus Christ. That has to be your number one priority. If it's not, you will fail in this ministry. You will fail in the attempt to do what I'm laying out for you to do. If you don't get this, ignore everything else I'm telling you. You get this first. He said, we are responsible for expanding the kingdom. We are supposed to go out there and take enemy ground. We are supposed to advance on the enemy. Go into their territory, take their ground. He said, in order to do that, you've got to take people that are involved in your ministry and you've got to train them to be mighty warriors in this battle. People that will stand beside you and swing the sword, not people that will be back on the back lines licking their wounds, wanting to know what you're going to do for them. You've got to train up mighty warriors to do that. He said this was really key. You've got to teach them. Do many, 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 many lessons. Don't ever quit doing these lessons on dying to self. They have got to learn that they've got to die to their wants, to their desires. They've got to die to what it is they want to live for. They have got to die to self. You're going to have to teach a lot of lessons on that. He went on to show me different scriptures that talked about that, of course. But that was something he said was key. He said, in doing that, you're going to teach them that it's not about you. That when you're serving God in this battle, it's not about you any longer. You have said, when you came out of the waters, if you remember it, you said, Lord, I offer my life to you. I'll no longer serve me, I'm going to serve you. I've made a turn. That's what that repent word was all about. I've made a turn. I'm not following that anymore. I'm now going to follow you and what you want, not what I want. It's not about you. He said, you've got to teach them that. He said, Lenny, in doing this, you're going to succeed in something that is ultimately the most important thing we're going to do in this ministry. You're going to give them a purpose. You're going to give them a mission that is bigger than anything that the world has to offer them. This is something that you've got to instill within your students. Now, being the dummy that I am, I decided it was time to challenge him. After all, I had some information evidently he didn't have because he wasn't spelling it out. I said, Mitch, what about keeping the saved saved? He looked at me with disgust. I'll never forget the look on his face. It was a look of disgust. It was a look of, why am I wasting my time telling you this? If you don't get this, you're not going to get anything. He looked at me and he said, Lynn, that's exactly what we're doing. He said, the only way we're going to keep the saved saved is to give them a mission, a purpose that is so much bigger than the world has to offer. He said, Lynn, changing someone's eternity, there's nothing bigger than that. He said, there's nothing these students can think of, dream of. There's nothing that can hit their minds that is a larger mission than changing someone's eternity. You've got to give them that mission. He said, if you just work on keeping the saved saved the other way, you're focusing on them. And that just makes selfish, spoiled children. Well, when I left there, I was excited. This plan sounded to me like a plan that could work. This plan sounded to me like a plan that was Bible-based. And the one I had tried was not Bible-based. Let me tell you, That's what we've been following in our campus ministry ever since. I didn't know how to do it. I learned it from someone else. And we've been following it, and let me tell you, God has blessed our ministry. As I told you, we baptized over 100. We've baptized students. We've baptized their friends. We've baptized their parents. We've baptized waitresses, mechanics, their bosses. I mean, there's just no limit to where God will reach when you stop making it about you. We're operating from the outreach filter model. I told you I'd give you more detail what that means, what he said that means, and that's what I'm doing now. I'm sorry some of you guys can't see this screen, but all of my students know and understand this. They understand this concept, and we constantly try to keep this before them. We're getting ready to put it before them again in another lesson when we get back so that they constantly keep this foremost in their mind. Everything in our ministry is done operating off of this model. No matter what idea somebody comes up with, if a student comes up to me and says, I've got this super idea for a fun event, root beer kegger, okay? This is my great idea. I want to do it because it'll be so much fun. I said, sorry, I don't see fun. Fun doesn't make it through the filter. How are you going to show me how that root beer kegger is going to reach out? Now, if you can show me that, I'm pumped about this root beer kegger. We can do that. But you've got to show me how it's going to work. It really didn't matter what I want them to know is it doesn't matter what the idea is. Even Bible study. We want to do a Bible study. Oh, Lynn, we got a great idea. We'll get into the dorms. We've got an in into the dorms, finally. And I know, you might not know what I'm talking about. I mean, in Florida, we're locked out of the dorms. Boston Movement or whatever it was called kind of burnt everything there, and you can't get in the dorms down there. But let's say someone comes out. We've got a RA that's working with us. We can get in the dorms. We've got an in. Let's go have Bible studies. That's a great idea. But if you can't show me how it's going to reach out, I'm still not interested. Believe me, you can do Bible studies on campus, in dorms, and still not be reaching out. Right, Aurelio? Y'all did that for a number of years before I got there, but they were just holy huddles. You didn't. God forbid somebody coming from the world would come in here about the Bible study. If they can't show me how it's going to reach out, we're not going to do it. When I say everything goes through that filter, everything goes through that filter. They want a website, which we have. We don't do a website unless it goes through that filter and you show me how it's going to reach out. Everything, every single idea we think up is run through that filter. What we believe that has done is teach them to think outside of themselves, to reach out. In outreach ministry, we're constantly working on keeping their minds focused on reaching out to others. And guys, it takes constant teaching and focus because Satan's real busy, especially with us ADD people. He's real busy about, I got my focus over here, we're going to reach out, and he shakes the keys over here, and all of a sudden I'm like, what? And focuses off of reaching out. He's real bad about that. Did any of you see the national championship basketball game this year? University of Florida and
UCLA.
University of Florida, so I don't even remember. I don't follow it that closely. But I did watch that game. We've got a lot of UF fans in our campus ministry. Even though they're USF students, they're UF fans. I have never quite figured that out. But strange to me coming from OU. I mean, OU, if you're at OU, you're an OU fan, right? I mean, somehow on our campus of 40,000, it doesn't work that way. We've got FSU fans. We've got UF fans. We've got Miami fans. But I don't have very many Bulls fans. I don't get it. But anyway, We were watching this game because I knew, again, like Carrie said, you've got to be where they are, and they're all watching this game, so I'm going to watch the game, and I'm watching the game, and if you remember, there's this one player named Noah. And Noah, the camera kept showing him after every big play or big defensive stand or anything, he'd run up into the face of one of his other students and he'd do this. He'd do this and something, he would say something when he was doing that. I was like, what is he saying? What's going on there? Because the TV commentators weren't telling you, and you couldn't hear him. You could see his mouth moving, he's doing this. Found out later from some of our UF fans and from of our friends that are actually up there and knew him, he was going to his teammates and saying, focus. If we stay focused on this game, we've got it. We're going to win this game, but we've got to stay focused. He did that all the way throughout the game. Here's one of the ways we help our students stay focused. One of many, but I wanted to share this with you. I hope it works.
On a dangerous seacoast where shipwrecks often occur, there was once a crude little life-saving station. The building was no more than a hut, and there was only one boat. But the few devoted members kept a constant watch over the sea. With little to no thought for themselves, they went out day and night, tirelessly searching for the lost. Some of those who were saved and various others in the surrounding areas wanted to become associated with the station and give their time and money in an effort to support the work. New boats were brought in and new crews were trained. And the little life-saving station grew. Some of these new members of the life-saving station were unhappy that the building was so crude and poorly equipped. They felt that a more comfortable place should be provided as the first refuge of those who were saved from the sea. They replaced the emergency cots with beds and put better furniture in the enlarged building. Now the life-saving station became a popular gathering place for its members, and they began to use it sort of as a club. Fewer members were now interested in going to sea on life-saving missions, so they hired lifeboat crews to do this work. The life-saving motif still prevailed in this club's decor, and there was a memorial lifeboat in the room where the club initiations were held. About this time, a large ship was wrecked off the coast, and hired crews brought in boatloads of cold, wet, half-drowned people. They were dirty and sick, and some of them were foreigners. The beautiful new club was in chaos immediately. The property committee hired someone to rig up a shower outside the club where victims of the shipwreck could be cleaned up before coming inside. The outsiders made the life-saving station extremely dirty. At the next meeting, there was a split in the club membership. Most of the members wanted to stop the club's life-saving activities because they felt that they were unpleasant and a hindrance to the normal social life of the club. But a small number of members insisted on life-saving as their primary mission and pointed out that they were still called a life-saving station after all. The dissenting group's members were voted down and told that if they wanted to save lives, they could begin their own life-saving station down the coast. So they did. As the years went by, however, the new station experienced the same changes that had occurred in the old station. It evolved into a club, and yet another life-saving station. History continued to repeat itself, and if you visit that eastern seacoast today, you will find a number of exclusive clubs along that shore. Shipwrecks are still frequent in those waters. But most of the passengers drown.
This is the kind of thing that we show our students. We believe that reaching them with multimedia is very important. It's something that's in their world. It's where they live. You watch my son on the computer, and I sit and watch him, and I get a headache. He's listening to music. He's chatting with two or three people at the same time, and he's jumping back and forth from websites. I mean, all at the same time. It drives me crazy. But it's where they are. They live in this multimedia world. We show them these kind of videos because we want to help them remain focused. In our ministry in Tampa, right now we have 7 interns. I want to talk just for a second because it leads into something else I'm going to talk about. I want to share with you what we look for in an intern. The very first thing we look for in an intern, we look for somebody that gets it. Somebody that has made their way through Carrie's funnel. They're down to the point and they understand what's going on. They understand what the ministry is about. They understand that we are focused on outreach. They get that. They understand how it is we go about making outreach. Matter of fact, they get it to the point that when they walk into a room, now these are people we look at before we pick them. They get it to the point that when they walk into a room, they're not walking into the room to figure out, you know, where they're going to have fun, what friend they're going to talk to. They walk into a room going, how can I make this environment better to reach out to people? What they are servants. Now, I warn them when we bring them in. When we sit down to talk with them, I explain to them that the church looks at them as leaders. And they're going to wear this big target. As soon as we put the tag intern on them, they're going to have this big target on their chest. Things that they've done in the past that were just normal, that's just them, that we laugh about and joke about, and now is going to become a problem. Somebody's going to approach you about it. A good example, one of our young interns came in last, I can't remember when he came in, early this year, one of our interns came in. Jeff's his name. Jeff came in, and Jeff is unique, has some unique gifts, very, very powerful young leader. He has a habit of burping at inappropriate times. Like somebody's reading a sermon in the middle of a Bible study. I mean, reading a scripture right in the middle of a Bible study. Burp. And everybody will laugh. You know, to me, my brain, it's like, oh man, you can't be doing that. What is the deal with that? So disruptive. But the kids love it. I mean, they think it's hilarious. So I've learned to just kind of, you know, okay, it's hilarious. Didn't bother saying anything about it. Well, he'd been doing that for a long time. He did it once, the first time he did it, after becoming an intern. And boy, did he get lambed. I got called into an elders meeting because one of my interns, don't you think that's a little inappropriate? I mean, burping during reading a scripture? I mean, and of course he got hit with it too. So I explained it to him. The church looks at you as leaders. But I want you to know, we're not going to put this label on you unless you're a servant. Because we're looking for people who are willing to fight their way to the bottom of the ladder, not to the top. You're not going to be leaders, you're going to be servants. Well, we've got many of them serving. We've got 7, as I told you. And many of them are not only ready to serve in Tampa, they're excited about these campus ministry plants. That's why so many of them came up here with us. They want to be a part of this. They're excited to be a part of something that's bigger than themselves. I want you to hear me here. If we're going to lower that 45% number, we're going to have to become servants ourselves. We're all, if this mission that have been laid before us, if we're going to accomplish this, we're going to have to become servants. Briefly, I want to address another problem I see coming that will hinder what we're trying to do. Some out there have seen this problem, and they understand that we're not growing. But instead of focusing outward, which is the answer, they think we just haven't focused inward strong enough. So they look around and they see other Christians out there and they think if we will unify with them, we'll be bigger and we can do bigger and better things. Guys, hear me, because you're going to be running into this. If you haven't run into it already, you will be running into it. That's still inward focused ministry. It does no good to take 2 sick ministries and put them together. I learned this math as a little boy in Gans, Oklahoma. 2 times 0 is 0. It's not going to work. All this unity talk is not going to lower that number. All it's going to do is temporarily make us feel larger and better because we were the ones that were able to unify. Guys, instead, what we need to focus on is becoming servants. We have got to turn our focus outwards. And I believe it starts with campus ministers. I believe this is where it's going to have to start. You're going to have to model it. Let me tell you the kind of servanthood I'm talking about. Let me tell you what I believe we've got to become and become like. I heard this story, I really won't go into the background of where I heard the story. I read it after I've heard it in one of the books recently I'm reading that all the campuses are reading, Blue Like Jazz, I think it is. I know the story in a little bit more detail. The story has been declassified, so there's more information that is available. I know a little bit of the information that's not declassified, but let me share with you this story. It's a very touching story, and it's a true story. This is about a Navy SEAL team and 2 national security agents that were sent out on a rescue mission. Only this rescue mission had a twist to it. A twist to it that's a little bit different than a normal rescue mission. Their mission was given 2 goals. One or the other. 13 people had been taken captive over in the Middle East. And these 13 people had information that was extremely sensitive to the national security of this country. They were sent in with this mission. First, find them and try to rescue them. Bring them home. That's what we want to happen. That's our first priority. However, if you can't get them home, if you get there and for some reason there's no way to get them home, you've got to kill them. Terrible, isn't it? But that was their mission. And these guys carry out their missions. I won't go into detail the whole drop, where they're dropped, the location, all of that. But they get dropped in, they find their way, and they find these guys in a prison cell. They get to the room they're in. These guys have got the lights on their helmets, and they get into the room. This room is four walls, no windows, and a dirt floor. They finally focus in on them. All the lights converge on one corner because it's where they are. All 13 of these men are huddled over in one corner of the room, laying in this muck. It's the best I can describe it. It's dirt floor. They've been in there a while. They have no bathroom facilities. You can imagine what they're laying in. And they're naked, and they're laying there, scared. They've been obviously been tortured. And they're laying there in fear. The Navy SEAL team does what normal Navy SEAL team would do, starts yelling out orders. We're here to rescue you. Men, get up. Come with us. I mean, they're excited. They found them. They can get them. They can rescue them. But the more they yell at them, the scareder they are. And they just huddle next to each other, start wrapping each other's arms and holding on. They're laying down and they're not going to get up. They're not letting go. They're scared. They don't trust these men. One of the Navy SEAL members hears in his ear the two commanders talking about this mission. He said, guys, there's too many of them. We can't carry them out. We're going to have to consider the second option. That SEAL member thought for a second and then an idea hit him. He said, guys, just give me a minute. I've got an idea. He took off all of his outer clothing. He took off his helmet. He took off his flak jacket. He took off everything he had from the waist up down to a bare breast. And he laid down in the muck with one of these captured men. Laid with him to the point he was face to face. He could see him. He could feel his breath on his face. He could see into his eyes. And he began to talk to him. He began to say, listen to me. We're here to rescue you. We are one of you. We're here to take you home. To take you home to your fathers. To take you home to your families. To take you home to your children. We're here to rescue you. Please trust us. Very close to him. He could feel his breath as he breathed. Finally, he could see with his eyes, in this man's eyes, recognition start to come on him. He decided to take a chance. He said, I'm going to stand up. When I do, if you stand up with me, these men, we can save them. You won't die. If you'll get up with me, we can take you home. And then he stood up. He stood up slowly. And as he stood up, the man began to stand up with him. And all 13 men, as a result of that, were rescued. Gentlemen, that's the kind of servants I'm talking about. And the model that Robert talked about, the model that Carrie talked about, guys, that's what Jesus did for us. Do you realize that? He took off his majesty. He took off his power. And he got down in this muck with us. He got down with us and he got face to face and he said, I am is one of you. I love you. I'm going to be with you till the very end. I want to take you to my Father. Please trust me. He got down with us. If you remember the Lord's Supper, the story in Scripture of the Lord's Supper, right after the Lord's Supper, you remember what happened? He decided this was the last lesson he was going to get to teach his apostles. This was evidently the most important lesson that he could bring them because it's the last one he brought them. You remember what he did? He took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist, he got down on his knees and he washed their feet. I think when we read about foot washing, I think it's a total different experience for us because we don't get it. I mean, yeah, wash my feet. What's the big deal? It's got socks that made it a little sweaty. What's the big deal? These guys, they walked where the animals walked. If you've ever been on a farm, you know what that means. Their feet were filthy. Disgusting. Only the lowest of servants did that. Only the lowest of servants got down and served in such a manner. That's what Jesus did. Why did he do that? What was it he was trying to get across to them, guys? Wasn't he trying to tell them? Didn't he have a message for them? Matthew 28:18, he laid out that message, didn't he? We are supposed to go and make disciples. We're supposed to baptize and teach them to obey all that he's commanded, right? Guys, he did not say, keep the saved saved. That's not the Great Commission. Now, don't get me wrong. I firmly believe we're supposed to keep the saved saved. But I believe you do that by teaching them to reach out. You do not do it by babysitting them. It just doesn't work. The only way we're going to keep the saved saved, as I've told you, is to give them a mission that is bigger than themselves. I don't want to brag about our ministry, but yet I do want to brag about our ministry. I don't want to brag about our ministry because I don't want you to look at me and say, oh, I'm saying I did all this. I didn't do anything, as I told you. I didn't know what I was doing. I still don't. But I want you to see, I've made a video. I want you to see what the kids in our ministry are saying. The difference between what before their life before and where they are now.
But there was just this emptiness. The hole, the abyss, was just gaping.
But I guess it was one of those deals where you just feel alone in a crowded room, you know? You never just feel complete. Something is always missing.
I just walk through the world and I see a whole bunch of voids, empty voids in people, which is what I had.
My life before Christ was just a constant wanting.
So there wasn't a whole lot of joy in my life.
If I didn't have God in my life, I'd probably be stuck in a pit somewhere.
I must say it was very selfish.
I was struggling with lust and...
And it was just empty.
And so I came home to guilt.
I just wanted to live as fast as I could, as legally as I could. Drinking, smoking, drugging as much as you possibly can.
Just wanting fulfillment and wanting loneliness so bad that you hurt. Physically, as well as emotionally.
Didn't really see what the purpose of everything was. Just kind of went day through day.
I got to a point where I had to decide who he was in my life. One band-aid after another. From drugs and alcohol to meaningless relationships.
I was a mess.
when I look back, I remember sadness. And feeling empty, you know?
It's like everyone thought you had it all together in high school and everything else, but inside you're screaming and you're just doing anything to either numb you or fill that hole you have that got you full. I was seeking something. I was just crying out with my actions, and I needed the Lord. I needed Christian friends, and I just felt baggage and guilt every morning. I woke up with a hangover or something like that. I felt so dirty.
What you've just seen and heard are young men and women explaining their life before Christ. Now listen as they speak about their life after Christ. Listen and watch for a new purpose.
Now that I've been brought to Christ, I'm so full of life and everything is so happy.
Now I have a reason for being here. I want everyone else to know that reason. Just know that they can enjoy life and share that joy with others and bring others to Christ. And that's what I want to do, and plant ministries. And
I realized that my life wasn't my own. There's just too many lost souls out there that need somebody to talk to understand that there's actually Christ out there. But realizing that growing his kingdom is better than anything else.
The ones that are born and raised in the church may have a fear of going out there in those holes, those pits, those broken roads to find the people that really need to be saved. And since I've been there, Yes, it's tempting to jump back in there, but I know I can't. I can't because I love God too much.
Thinking of others besides myself, that's what's changed.
And I just wish that if there's anything I could do, that Christ's light shines enough through me that people can see that love and want to cling to it as much as I have clung to Christ.
The first baptism I witnessed after I was baptized just brought chills to my spine. It brought me so much joy in realizing that, you know, this is what my life should be about. This is what it is that I'm looking forward to. And I look forward to continue to work in the ministry and to help out and reaching out to the lost. There's no greater pleasure than that. You know, I look forward to also helping start ministries wherever they need to be started.
I knew that God loved me and He had a plan for me. I see that His plans are bigger than mine.
I mean, it's full. And it's just a wonderful feeling. I would love to spread that with anybody.
Yeah, it's just Earth. It's just here. We're aliens in this world. And I'm just such at peace right now. And I love Him so much. And I love my college group. And I've never had friends and family like this before. And I'm going to hold tight to it. How amazing does it feel to have someone close to you to call you up and say, hey, I got baptized. I'm devoting my life to the Lord. That feeling's amazing, and I don't want to lose it. That joy is something that God gives you to fire you up, because He wants many, many others to be with Him. And being a part of this college group really has given me a glimpse of how I can change the kingdom.
I know there's a bigger purpose to it. Know that there's a God who loves me, and He sent His Son to die for me. And that is the most important thing, sharing that with others. That is more important than my own desires, and I realize that.
There's so many people, myself included, that we just want to know, we just want a purpose, we just want a goal. And as long as I'm here, and as long as I'm breathing, I've got to get that message out there.
Recently, I felt the call to minister, Lord, to spread His word in a real way and devote my life to that. So it's been exciting working in a campus ministry that's all about that. That's all about spreading that word and seeing people get in that water and come out changed and get on a campus where there's so many lost out there and so many in the same hopeless wreck position I was in before. And now I get to share this hope with them.
Guys, I know I've taken up a lot of your time. I'm going to fast forward a little bit to the end of what I had. Really, you can move on that to the end. I know that what has been laid before us here by Marvin, by Robert, by Carrie, by Wes and his vision. When Wes was in Tampa and he was expelling out to me some of this vision, I got to be honest with you. I mean, I was looking at him and saying, yeah, go for it. But under my breath, I was thinking, man, what a dreamer. This can't happen. And yet he got up here and look, here we are. Guys, it is happening and we can make it happen. I honestly know we can start something here. And I think it is starting here. But it's going to take you guys all buying into a vision. Taking off that shell, that protection you put around yourself. And getting down and serving. And getting down and loving people and getting involved. We're going to have to do two things. You're going to have to go home and turn your ministries outward. That has got to happen. If that doesn't happen, nothing else is going to happen. I know a lot of you already have outward-focused ministries. So in a lot of cases, I may be preaching to the choir here on that part. But for those of you that don't, that's got to happen for the next stage to happen. Then you've got to train part of your ministry to become a part of these plant teams. If these two things take place, we can change the face of this nation. It can happen. We can lower that 45% down to 30% again, to even lower. We can lower it to 25% and lower. The question is, and the question that's before us, will any of you pick up the towel and serve? Will any of you take that outer garment off, get down with the people, and look them face to face and say, I love you. I want to take you to Jesus. That's what it's going to take. Thank you for inviting me to speak, Wes. Thank you for listening to me. I didn't have any veins pop, but I'm trying. I'm learning. I'll get it down, Robert. You just, maybe a personal private one-on-one. I can figure out how to do that. Guys, thank you. Thank you very much.